It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Kate Archer-Kent. 1 billion children worldwide are at extremely high risk from the effects of climate change. That's the latest findings from UNICEF, the United Nations agency that provides humanitarian aid to children. It's an issue that has motivated young people around the world to take action. Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg became one of the most recognizable voices after she led tens of thousands of students on strike to call attention to the need for stronger international climate agreements.
It has now almost been 3 years since the school strike started. And since then, millions of more children have joined the fight, fighting for a safe future and a safe present. Children are the ones who will be most impacted by this crisis and the ones who will suffer the most from its consequences.
Thunberg once famously told a room full of the world's most powerful politicians, quote, "You all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You've stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words." Do you worry about the world that we're leaving our children and grandchildren? How do you think they'll be able to cope with the effects of climate change in the decades to come? We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Joining us this morning to discuss the latest findings from UNICEF is Beth McCausland. She's the managing director of the Midwest region for UNICEF USA. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Molly.
Good morning. Good morning to you. Well, I want to talk about your new report looking at the risks facing children around the world. Why catalog these risks to children specifically?
Yes. Well, as you certainly had opened or shared in your opening, the risks that are impacting children because of climate change, these kids are the ones who bear no responsibility largely for the climate crisis around the planet, but absolutely are suffering the most both today, and this is the world they'll inherit in the future. And so for us, UNICEF, as a global organization charged with a mandate for all things children and child rights, really has an expertise around data as well, and using that data to help us drive solutions and drive change for children. And so this was an opportunity for us to be able to synthesize the risks that we're seeing around the planet in parallel with different indicators that we're seeing on child well-being. And so in that regard, data and knowledge is truly power, and it will allow governments and businesses and communities and young people to tackle the problem in ways that are really targeting the hardest to hit.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of the effects. I want to talk about hurricanes. You know, we've got Hurricane Ida on our minds with more than a million people without power in Louisiana and Mississippi over the weekend. I mean, we know that hurricanes can be some of the most costly and devastating natural disasters, and they're getting worse. What do we know about how children and families there are coping?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And I think that's it. We see the headlines that say 1 million without power. It's tough to come back, the flooding and the destruction. But I think if you go the next step further and think about it through the lens of a child, those are kids who are getting ready to go back to school or maybe back in school, and now their education has been paused. Those were kids who maybe were set for their wellness checks or other important doctor's appointments. Those are now being put on pause. Children's lives are being put on pause through these sorts of disruptions, both as we're seeing right here on our own shores, but also in parallel around the planet. And of course, we are feeling and seeing that these are only getting stronger and more destructive and frequent. And so I think for me, I have two young children, you know, and I think about like what it's like to go and run and grab all of the flashlights and the other things to try and like make our family safe in emergency or otherwise. But like, if you go the next layer further to think about what this means for kids, and certainly down in New Orleans and Louisiana and Mississippi, like the trauma of the experience for these children as well is something that stays with them for a long time.
I feel that. I lived through Hurricane Andrew in Florida, and that was a huge event, even by those standards back in the 90s.
Absolutely. No, it's true. And I think, you know, UNICEF is actually, we were an organization born out of emergency response 75 years ago after World War II. And truly emergency response means in humanitarian response within that remain a really key part of the work that we do. We respond for all things children in 300 emergencies around the planet. And so at present, we are assessing the situation here domestically down in Louisiana and Mississippi with our partners in the community, but we have a history also of responding here domestically on being able to support and provide some of the technical assistance that we can draw from our experience around the world and things like restarting education for kids, helping kids feel kind of psychologically safe as they're coming back into the classroom after a really disruptive event like this, different things in terms of child protection and helping to connect kids who have maybe been separated from their families. So we have experience doing that along the South, really, in terms of where some of these, you're talking about Andrew, Hurricane Harvey of a couple of years ago.
Katrina.
This Katrina. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, we have in our Midwest office a box of school supplies, a mobile school, if you will. It's a large, gosh, if you could think about it, an extra large suitcase made out of metal filled with school supplies. That was one of the interventions that we had shared for Hurricane Katrina 16 years ago. How can kids just continue learning when they don't have access to their classrooms or their classrooms have been destroyed? And so that's something that we can take a look at both here, but it's sort of a part of our getting back to learning portfolio after an emergency like this around the planet.
So you would deliver these, you would take these around to crisis spots, to disasters to help children learn.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, we can follow that thread there because I think it's one of the most interesting things that UNICEF brings to the table for our response for kids is just this massive supply network. Actually, we have a global supply warehouse in Copenhagen and then associated spaces throughout the world that we can move supplies within 24 hours to the hardest to reach places. And so we also saw and used that surge capacity, that supply capacity, just in the last couple of weeks in response to the earthquake and then the following tropical storm down in Haiti as well. And so that's a big piece of the way that UNICEF can respond for children too, is we have a footprint in 190 countries around the world. And so also as a part of our planning process in each one of those countries, it's thinking about what is the disaster or the climate event or other types of emergencies that might hit in this place, and how do we plan accordingly? Having pre-positioned supplies or plans in place and networks of partners, and understanding how to launch a community assessment after something like that happens is a part of our portfolio. In Haiti, for example, we were able to move out medical supplies to one of the hospitals down in the south there. Within 24 hours of that earthquake hitting, you know, as moms are standing just outside of the hospital with their children needing urgent care, the convoy can come rolling up with the supplies that they need.
So we've talked about hurricanes, earthquakes.
Yeah.
What are some of the other risks that you found in this research surveying the risks to children worldwide?
Yeah, no, that's great question. To dial it back just even to the macro of what this report is, it really was a first of its kind comprehensive analysis of climate risk from a child's perspective. So what we did is take two sort of overlays. One are those risks that we're talking about, those the tropical storms and heating, our heating planet and the overwarming in places. Flooding is a really significant issue that affects so many children around the planet, both coastal flooding and river flooding. Just access to clean air, something we can take so for granted as we just like look out and can see the big blue sky here in the Midwest. And then on the other side of this index were just different indicators as it relates to to child well-being. So health and nutrition and ability to breathe that clean air. If you put those two pieces together and overlay that data, that helps us to see where children are truly the most vulnerable. And so the report lists it out in that way. And the tough part about this is that we really see, gosh, 95% of the world's children are impacted by at least one of these things. But unfortunately, there are far too many kids who are impacted by a number of these different risk factors. That gets really complicated.
We're speaking with Beth McCausland, Managing Director for the Midwest Region for UNICEF USA. This is The Morning Show. I'm Molly Stentz. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're talking about the latest findings from UNICEF about how children are particularly vulnerable to our changing climate. We have with us Beth McCausland, Managing Director of the Midwest Region for UNICEF USA. Do you believe that future generations will be able to manage climate change? Or is this an existential threat to humanity? Join us. We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Beth, we've been talking about disasters in the southern U.S. and Haiti. And I wonder who, when you look globally at the risks posed by climate change to children, who's most impacted?
No, it's an excellent question. I mean, I think as we look at, if you follow the report and follow into the data, what we're also seeing, for example, the Central African Republic is the country most at risk, or where its children are the most at risk based on these different indexes. And what's unfortunate about that is that you also then see in many of these countries that fall within that top 10, that top 20, places that where children are also caught in a significant amount of conflict. And so the cycle that we're seeing is that in places of conflict and insecurity, there's also less resilience to be able to combat some of these natural or even man-made climate challenges. And then it keeps flipping. That then feeds the insecurity as well. But I think I can tell you too, there's beyond just the weather crises, there's other types of effects on children. One with an interesting a solution team that's based actually in Wisconsin. And so as I was reading through the report and thinking about, you know, life here with my own two young kids, I was shocked by the numbers around the lead poisoning. And so nearly one third of the world's children are impacted by lead exposure. And so coming back to that, we know that that's particularly bad for babies. You were asking, you know, who's really most vulnerable? One of the things that we see throughout the report and throughout the world is that those under five, those, again, least responsible for what the world is doing in this space, are the most vulnerable to this. Children under five are, their brains are still developing, they're physically less resilient to these sorts of shocks. But with lead, that's truly the case. As we know, brains are still developing under five, and particularly with babies. And so lead exposure in the early years can be really devastating for kids.
And how do you draw that connection from lead poisoning to climate change?
Well, it's the climate shocks of it, the environmental shocks of it. I guess you could pan it up in that way. So beyond just the weather type climate, it is the climate in which these children are living. And so actually UNICEF has partnered up with Wisconsin-based company Clarios Foundation and another partner of ours called Pure Earth actually to combat this. Clarios and Pure Earth and UNICEF really have set out to protect every child's potential together and to end this lead exposure that we're seeing. Again, that's also affecting one third of children globally. That's just, you know, the irresponsible recycling of batteries or other ways that lead contaminants can get into our environment and into our climate. Bangladesh is one of the countries that this partnership is targeting, but is also one of those countries that's identified in that top list there of countries where the risk is the greatest. And I know of a story of a young boy who's 8 years old. His name was or is Anik, and he lives in Bangladesh and just loves soccer. And the place that he would go out and play soccer with his buddies, or football in his words, it all of a sudden turned into a sort of an unofficial battery recycling plant. Mm-hmm. And the air quality in the space, the bleed into the ground and whatnot was really having a tough impact on the community. And his mom was acknowledging, and he was saying, you know, it was just so strange. All of a sudden I was having a harder time with my schoolwork and I was losing like just memories here and there and having headaches. And unfortunately behind that story are these other sort of layers, in that, the reason that that little plot of land was available to become this unofficially battery recycling plant is because that the farmland there, was no longer usable due to the climate shocks and whatnot. And so I think to me, that was one of the other big takeaways in reading this report and just thinking about the work around the world is just the layers and the interconnectedness on this. Now, I would say one of the cool things about this, though, is that we know that there are solutions. I think that's part of the reason this partnership came together is because you're bringing together three groups that have the tools and the resources collectively to be able to end this. And so they are doing a lot of site remediation, awareness building work, which I think is massively important, not just on this topic, but on any topic related to the climate impact on children, is just helping kids understand how do we avoid these sorts of things in the first place, so we don't end up fixing it on the back end.
Yeah, what guidance does the report offer to policymakers?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other piece that's special to UNICEF's mandate is that we believe so strongly that children should have a seat at the table. They, again, are the ones who are carrying this on their shoulders today, but also into the future. And so they should certainly have access and a voice at the table as governments, as communities are tackling this. I know it sometimes sounds so lofty to say that kids should have a seat at the table with government. We really, really mean that. But I would say that every level, we know that, you know, even in our own house, whether we're choosing water, bottles of water, or the ways that we can make our own homes more sustainable, every single smaller action also will snowball up into greater actions for our planet too.
What are you hoping comes out of this risk index?
I think there's a few things. One, I would say a focus on the fact that it's time. I think the report is very serious. It paints the picture of the devastating impact of these climate risks on children today, not just the future, but literally today. So I hope that it serves as a wake-up call to our world. But what I really appreciate about the report is that it focuses in the data. It's not just broad strokes and the dark clouds, but it helps us say, okay, if we follow these numbers and we follow these maps and we can look at where can we reach the hardest to reach, then all boats can rise. And I would say that's a principle that guides our work always, but it is especially effective. It's effective for, you know, the philanthropy or the government dollars are going into climate action. When you target the hardest to reach, the rest can follow more easily. It's a more effective and efficient way of doing the work. But I also hope that it empowers young people. I hope that young people can see this as their opportunity to say, well, this is through my lens and with my voice, and that I too can take this information and do the little things or big things in my own sphere of influence to make a difference. And so there are some resources. UNICEF has a global platform for youth called Voices of Youth. So it's at voicesofyouth.org, and young kids and students in Wisconsin can connect with their peers around the planet to share different ideas about how they are elevating this concern.
And we can throw that link up on our website at wpr.org/mornings. And yeah, I'm wondering what response you've received so far since the report was published.
You know, I think there's been a ton of news on it. And I think there's been really great coverage in that regard. But I think there's been an appreciation for having a tool that can, again, focus our efforts. There have been, as we know, there's no shortage of reports or other content out there around the urgency behind this climate crisis. But I think what this offers is a real acknowledgement that the climate crisis is a child rights crisis. And for those who are focused on making our world a better place for kids, it offers a tool to help guide our actions together.
Well, thank you, Beth, for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Beth McCausland is the managing director of the Midwest region for UNICEF USA. Up next is news and a story of our Wisconsin life. Then, should we be paying people to get vaccinated? Let's talk about it. I'm Molly Stentz. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.